And now just rest for a few moments in a natural state, in your natural breath, and just observe. Observe any sensations that are in the body. You may want to check into your emotional body, the mental body, the spiritual body. Sort of be aware, but grasping after nothing, just allowing, resting in awareness. Any questions about this practice, please feel free to ask them. And also, I always like to offer an opportunity if people would like to share a little bit of their experience.
Thoughts settled down to nothing.
That was good for you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I went to the void.
So the activity of the mind settled down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I see other people shaking their heads as well.
That's something I've been noticing here lately, is about the activity of the mind and also the calmness throughout the body.
In the body?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. It's very helpful. You can see in just a few moments how things can shift for us. The mind is really a very interesting thing. It creates a whole world in and of its own. And we think that's very real. But if we can get a glimpse of it, we can see that it's illusory. You know, like a sand castle at the ocean shore, or even a rainbow. And we can sort of pierce through that veil. Yeah. Other comments or observations? It'd be a long time for you to lay down, mister.
I've felt a tremendous amount of anxiety in my life lately, and it did reduce that some, but I still felt some at the end.
Did you? Were you anticipating the end of the practice?
Anticipating. I'm not sure which one.
It's just a question, maybe contemplated. Sometimes when I think when we start to become relaxed, there can even be anxiety in that, because we go away from what is sort of the normal vibration.
Uh-huh.
And so that arises again, like, whoa, maybe I'm not saying this is of you, but I think that I recognize this, that sometimes we get, we're so used to a kind of method of operation that when we go away from that, we can get a little anxious about that. Yeah. So just observing that, and I mean, yahoo, if you kind of can see that, that's great. Anything else? I think that's a very important observation, Noor. Reflect on that. Richard?
Mind had become very quiet, and in the beginning of the practice of breathing in through the mouth and out through the nose, I touched a place of, for lack of any other word, was like divine sense of humor. It was a vision of going up into the third eye and sipping champagne in a hot tub, sitting next to the Buddha and the Christ, and hearing, and yes, this is wonderful, and don't take it so seriously. Mm-hmm. And then it dissolved. It just went back into the quiet.
Well, it's interesting because actually that breath corresponds to the element of fire, mm-hmm. which does correspond to the element of joy or the emotion of joy. So you got that without me having to say that that's what it was. You experienced it. This to me always validates the meaning and the esoteric value of these practices, that you got that without having someone tell you that that's what it was. You experienced it. You see how important that is? That validates that for you.
There was a brief moment where there was the sense that the breathing out was benefiting everyone in the room. Everyone's breathing out was benefiting everyone. There was a certain entrainment there. And it was very light. It was not an attachment. It was just there.
And even beyond. It was told to me that in summer school in Suren, where Hazard and I Khan gave summer school in the 20s, and also in Holland, that when he led these practices, there was a very large metronome, and they were done in a rhythmic fashion. And we'll do a practice together that is done rhythmically, but that everyone was inhaling and exhaling to the same beat, because it does synchronize people. However, I'm pretty sure that when you started to experience that, it's because we probably just synced up anyway. You know, I think that that happens, that it's like those, you know, when they have the two metronomes and they're going separate and pretty soon they're all going together. I think that we do that. I think we sync up somehow. Neil?
That's so reminiscent for me of a visit I made. Do you realize all of us are involved in an endless spiral and movement, and it can be evidenced by just hanging a huge pendulum.
Yes.
And you'll see it swinging these graceful arcs.
Yes.
And eventually completing every spot in the circle. And so we're all in this double helix. Mm-hmm. We're all in this whirl of mm-hmm. creativity and infinity and infinite openness and loveliness. And it's so complete. It's so everlasting. We were always here, and we will always be here. Mm-hmm. And yet we are necessarily discovering something important, you know, with our finite minds, too.
Yeah. Einstein said it, an energy created is never destroyed. And we are vibration. Is there anything else anyone else would like to share at this moment? Yes.
Well, I think that it's just so interesting because some of these practices we've been doing each month and how, we maybe hear the same introduction to them or something, but how each time I hear the instruction differently and it is in a deeper way. So even in this example today, there was something about the piece about really focusing on I don't know if I have the words right, but my interpretation of it is that kind of strength of the breath. Mm-hmm. And it really brought about a different quality and depth to the practice for me.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
That's what's so amazing about the undeterminacy of everything that's going on about us, is that we are creating anew in each moment. So every moment is that fresh. It's there. It's now. And yet it's forever. And that how, you know, it's an eternal mystery.
Now the Buddhists call that beginner's mind. So I'd like to read a little bit from this book by Hazard and Icon. It's on the mysticism of sound. And if it speaks to you, our friends in Canada who produce these books have made some available. They're on the counter in the kitchen, and they're for sale. This is on the silent life. Is Neil going to join us again? Joe, can you tell? I think you need to do something. I don't want the gas to be left on. Thank you. We can take this moment to just focus on the breath again. Inhaling, I inhale divine light and life, and exhaling, I radiate the same. So again, this is titled The Silent Life. The life absolute from which has sprung all that is felt, seen, and perceived, and into which all again merges in time, is a silent, motionless, and eternal life, which among the Sufis is called Zat, Z-A-T. So again, the life absolute from which has sprung all that is felt, seen, and perceived, and into which all again merges in time, is a silent, motionless, and eternal life which amongst Sufis is called Zat. Now, if you ever watch any of the shows on the nature of the world, the universe, you know what this is describing. It was that vast primordial space before, the moment before that. They said, what is it, helium, Joe? Or somebody as a scientist, helium and hydrogen came together, and there was the spark, and from that, the whole universe emerged. That's what's being described. Mystics understand that from an internal reality, but it is describing an external reality as well. I'll read it again and think of it that way. But each one of us is like that. Consciousness is like that. I mean, does anyone contemplate that? What was before the before? And what will be after the after? It's being described here. It's very beautiful. And it's not quite a mystery. because science is proving these things now to us. Listen again. The life absolute, from which has sprung all that is felt, seen and perceived, and into which all again merges in time, is a silent, motionless, and eternal life, which among Sufis is called Zat. Every motion that springs forth from this silent life is a vibration and a creator of vibrations. Within one vibration are created many vibrations. As motion causes motion, so the silent life becomes active to a certain part and creates every moment more and more activity. Now listen to this. Losing thereby the peace of the original silent life. It is the grade of activity of these vibrations that accounts for the various planes of existence. These planes are imagined to differ from one another, but in reality, they cannot be entirely detached and made separate from each other. The activity of vibrations makes them more gross, meaning more dense, and thus the earth is born of the heavens. Again, a pretty good description in non-scientific terms of the Big Bang. Do you all kind of hear that? Now, I always tell people, you'll notice I go way around Robin Hood's barn to get to the point, so I'm sort of setting, you know, it's like I'm building the setting, the small little jewels are going around it, and pretty soon, you know, the major gem will be there. So be patient, I'm building something here. So the reading goes on. The mineral, vegetable, animal, and human kingdoms are the gradual changes of vibration. Did we not know that? That we started, I mean, it was like, you know, molten lava became hardened, and then because of that there was condensation, and we had the water element came in from the water. I mean, you know, he's describing all of this. There was the vegetation that gave rise to other forms of life. So here we go. The mineral, vegetable, animal, and human kingdoms are the gradual changes of vibrations, and the vibrations of each plane differ from one another in their weight, breadth, length, color, effect, sound, and rhythm. Humans are not formed of vibrations, but we live and move in them. They surround us as the fish is surrounded by water. They're all around us. And again, I like to give the example. Cabrilla's computer's over there turned on, and I have three. Joe has one. We have four computers over here. They're all talking to each other. I mean, we can send files without even through the internet, through Bluetooth now. Everyone know what Bluetooth is? So these vibrations are bouncing all around us. They're here. If we bring the computer here, we can see that. But they're not visible, but we're being affected by them. And some of that is good, and some of that is not so healthy, let's say. So we want to be sure that we're very clear in our vibration and the vibrations around us. So we're getting kind of set up for this in this practice. Our different moods, inclinations, affairs, successes, and failures are all the conditions of life depend upon a certain activity of vibrations. whether these be thoughts, emotions, or feelings, are different moods, inclinations, affairs, successes, and failures, and all the conditions of life depend upon a certain activity of vibrations. Whether these be thoughts, emotions, or feelings, it is the direction of the activity of vibrations that accounts for the variety of things and beings. This vibratory activity is the basis of sensation and the source of all pleasure and pain. Its cessation is the opposite of sensation, and all sensations are caused by a certain grade of activity of vibration. There are two aspects of vibration, fine and gross, both containing varied degrees. Some are perceived by the soul, some by the mind, and some by the eyes. Does that make sense? That there are some things that touch us at the very core of our being. We don't know why, but they do. They make us feel something so deep that it's beyond our thinking realm. It may not even be rational, but it touches us nonetheless. A vibration that goes to the soul, it resonates there deeply. Can you understand that? And then also there are things that we, vibrations that exist that capture our mind. And we say, oh my gosh, I think I always knew that somehow. But it's put in such a way that I totally get that now, right? Mm-hmm. And then some things we see with the eyes. They're physical manifestation. And we can observe them in a physical way. Does that make sense? Yes.
In my background in radio, there are all kinds of vibrations, and we can only hear, just deal with the audio, the ones that we can hear from 20 to 20K.
Yeah.
And yet, we can hear them all dialing in 32,000 or so anywhere, 32 megs or anything. You have a receiver. It puts out a frequency that's close to it. So that brings it down to the audible range.
Right, exactly.
And so as you say, they were there all along.
They are there all along. And that analogy others have heard me make in this class, that even if we had a transistor radio and we brought it here with a battery, doesn't even need electricity, we just tune it and it's picking up those vibrations that are already here. So we must... Well, we don't have to do anything. I mean, that if one thing, this path of Sufism is spiritual liberty, so one is free to choose. But to be aware of that. I mean, have you not just left the house one day as happy as could be, and all of a sudden, maybe you're in public and something just hits you? Mm-hmm. What do you think that is? Mm-hmm. What brought that on? It was a vibration. But we think, oh, now I'm in a bad mood. I want to go kick the tires or something. You know? But if we can understand that, we don't have to even really block it. But if we train ourselves very well with the breath, and we know our own mind and our own vibration, this is the point of doing these breath practices.
We can stay centered.
We know our own vibration. We know when something foreign has come. And we don't have to really... But we can, with the breath, transform it. Well, sometimes maybe we need to block it, I can't say. But for me, it's the breathing in, observing, and offering something else back. Does that make sense? So that we can be like this. What do you think is happening to this bowl? This mallet's going boing... Thank you. that it's radiating a beautiful sound. So something strikes us. We observe it. All of a sudden, I feel depressed. I feel angry. I feel anxious. Is that my natural state? No, I don't think it is my natural state. All right. Then I can transform that. If we see it as just pure energy, which really, truly it is, it's only the mind that wants to grab it and define it in another way. You understand what I'm saying to you? It's energy. I'm deviating a little bit from Sufism. I'm talking pure Tantra here now. You know, I always like to say Tantra isn't, you know, this. Do you know what I'm saying? Excuse me, Buddha. He knows. But you know what I mean? People think Tantra is this thing. It's not that. It's understanding the essential nature of things and that it's energy and that we can use that energy. Okay. Did that help, Catherine? Did that make it clear?
Yes.
Are there other questions? Because I think that's a good question. If it's not so... This is a different kind of language. We almost have to tune to a different way to hear this. So I appreciate your question very much. Are there other questions? So I'll backtrack for just a moment. What the soul perceives are the vibrations of feeling. What the mind conceives are the vibrations of thoughts. The soul's feeling. How does one feel? The mind is thoughts. What are the thoughts that enter one's mind? What the eyes see are vibrations solidified from their etheric state and turned into atoms which appear in the physical world, constituting, get ready because this is the big jewel coming down here, constituting the elements, ether, gets more defined, air, which gets more defined, fire, which becomes containable, water, which becomes solid, earth. And every sacred tradition brings these elements into play. I've been to Hindu practices, I've been to Muslim practices, I've been to Hindu practices, I've been to Christian practices. Every one of them has air. Every one of them has fire. Candles, yes? Also air, incense, frankincense, myrrh. All from the air. Yeah? Then fire. All have candles. Many traditions give burnt offerings. Then water. Baptism. Blessing. Cleansing. And the earth element. As we participate, the altar frequently represents that. These are all the elements that we're made of, and our whole earth, at least, you know, our universe, we could say. Now, you know that most so-called primitive cultures understand this far better than we do, and they invoke these elements, they tune to these elements. And I'll tell this story now because it's redundant to some, but not many. When I was in India this spring, I met a gentleman. He was really a great music master. And he's traveled the world. I mean, he's been invited to UN and all of this to sing for peace. Indian raga music, musical scale. And one of the things, I mean, I knew this because I had known about Indian music, and people had always said, oh, this raga is only sung in the spring, or this one's only in the summer, or this one's only in the winter, this one's only in the morning, this one's only in the evening. So there was some place in me that understood a little bit of that structure. But meeting him awakened something else. And what I understood by listening to him was that it's this singing, this vibration of sound, is an invocation of the elements. It's like singing to the guardians of those elements. Very ancient musical tradition, but understood that. But again, if you think about every religious tradition that I know, at least, brings these elements into their ritual, there's a reason for that. Do you feel that in your soul a little bit? Do you feel the depth of that?
Mm-hmm.
Can you all feel that? So now the cat's out of the bag with the elements. Okay. And I'll read a little bit more from this teaching. And I have something else also from another part of the teachings of Hazard and Icon I'd like to share. But there's a practice that I'm leading up to. And you know, people say, okay, now let's do the elemental breaths in and out the nose, in and out the... But it's like, well, what does that mean? You know, what I'm trying to develop is some depth here of this practice. And I really believe that we don't need complexity, but we need depth. And when we do one thing with great sincerity, that one thing is the very thing that can take us the entire way on this path. So I'm not interested in a lot of tricks. I'm interested in some depth and some understanding. Does that make sense? I think you all agree if you're here. Okay. So, manifestations being formed of vibrations. The planets are the primal manifestations, each planet having its special tone. Now you might be saying to yourself, well, can she just get to the point? But let me tell you something. I think of how I marvel, you know, when I've had the great privilege of being in the presence of the Dalai Lama when he's offered teachings, or my own teacher, Komtul Rinpoche, or even Hidayat Inayat Khan, whose father is Hazrat Inayat Khan. And, you know, they go all around. Now I see myself, I'm doing... I always think, oh my God, I've come here to learn this thing. Could they just get to the point? But what they're doing is they're getting this whole history, this whole background, you know, sort of that's the vastness behind this one little point, you know. So I ask for your indulgence and your patience, because now I myself am doing that very thing. Okay. But here again, we're trying to give a view of sort of the cosmic origin of these practices. So here he's saying, manifestations being formed of vibrations. The planets are the primal manifestation, each planet having its special tone. Now, I'm sure those satellites are picking up vibrations that are orbiting in our solar system. I mean, each planet has a color. Each planet has its own rotation, some fast, some small. One could assume that there's a tone, an audible tone as well. Therefore, each note represents one planet. So we have that note... Re mi fa sol la ti do. In raga, it's sa re pa da mi sa, I think is what it is. So they all have these tones, and these are representing what Pythagoras, if any of you have studied that sort of mathematical theory of, what did he call it, the music of the spheres, but he was a great mathematician, Pythagoras, and he developed that whole theory of the music of the spheres, based on the different notes of the planets. You know that? Has anyone studied that? A little bit, yeah. It's a great teaching. Each individual, therefore, has a note particular to oneself. which is according to one's birth planet. Okay, now we're getting unraveling a little bit of the mystery of astrology. For this reason, a certain tone appeals to a particular person according to the grade of one's evolution. Every element has a particular sound particular to itself. In the finer elements, the circle of sound expands. So air element, very expansive. Okay. Fire also. And in the grosser elements, it narrows. Okay, so it's a more dense sound, maybe a lower pitch sound. It is therefore distinct in the former and indistinct in the latter. We're talking, you know, sort of the bandwidth of the vibration. The earth, so as I say these things, sort of, you know, contemplate the earth, feel the presence of the earth. The earth has various aspects of beauty, as well as the variety in its sound. Its pitch is on the surface. Its form is crescent-like, and its color is yellow. The sound of the earth is dim and dull and produces a thrill, activity, and movement in the body. All instruments of wire and gut, as well as the instruments of percussion, such as the drum and cymbals, represent the sound of earth. Now, I can also tell you that this represents sort of the base of the spine, okay? And that's why sometimes when people start drumming, they just get faster and faster and faster and faster. Have you noticed that? Or even if yourself, you're drumming. I remember my friend Karunaji, Karunamayima. She's a great Indian raga master in India. I've seen her stop an entire concert in the middle of it and say to the drummer, "Stop. You are out of control. Your base chakra is out of balance." And totally humiliate. I mean, you know, it was important because it was a lesson for everyone. But, you know, they get so involved in their own sensation that they get excited, you see. Only someone very balanced in that way can keep a constant rhythm. Now, I'm telling you this for another reason. Bye-bye. Go with God. Be safe.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here. Tell Lynn hi.
Okay.
Okay. So when you're going kind of out of rhythm somehow, think of the earth. The earth can offer stability and balance. Does that make sense?
Term grounded.
Yes, that's right. Hence the term grounded. Okay. The second sound of water is deep. Its form is serpent-like. Its color green. It is best heard in the roaring of the sea, the sound of running water, of mountain rills, the drizzling and pattering of the rain, the sound of water running from a pitcher into a jar, from a pipe into a tube, from a bottle into a glass, all have a smooth and lively effect, and a tendency to produce imagination, whim, dream, affection, and emotion. The instrument, Jalatarang, and I don't know what that is, I can't help you. Does anyone know what the Jalatarang is? Let's see if we can... Oh, yes. Is an arrangement of china bowls or glasses graduated. We do know what it is. Graduated. Let's go. In size and water and filled with water in a proportion to a desired scale. So you've seen that. And I know Hazrat Anayat Khan had those. They were bowls of different sizes with different depths of water, and he kind of played them with a kind of wand, and they made these beautiful sounds.
Is that the harmonium?
No, this is... I don't have a harmonium anymore. Do I? Where did my harmonium go?
It's like the turn of the century. They do concerts with these.
No, these are really actually clear crystal mm-hmm. bowls. A harmonium is a small instrument with a keyboard that you pump like this. I have a small treaty box, but I don't know. I guess I gave that back to Ollie Cotter. That's okay. So these instruments have a touching effect upon the emotions of the heart, the water element. You know, we give this expression, oh my heart is overflowing, right? I mean, and when you're, if you're in the water, even the shower or the bathtub, you have a lot of creative ideas sometimes come. And it's very soothing to us, is it not? It's a wonderful conductor in that way. And then the sound of fire is high pitched. Its form is curled and its color red. It is heard in the falling of a thunderbolt and in the volcanic eruption, in the sound of a fire when blazing, in the noise of squibs, firecrackers, rifles, guns, and cannons. All these have a tendency to produce fear. You know, very kind of erratic. We're losing people one by one. Is everyone else okay? Yes.
When you were saying that, it connected back to where you say all the religions have all the elements. And in the Catholic tradition, the fire comes through in the high pitches and fear-inducing noises of like the Requiem Mass, Dies Irae.
Yeah.
Very high pitched and very mm-hmm. fire and very much designed to induce fear.
Exactly.
Deliberate.
Yeah, and it's very quick moving. I mean, that sound of fire, you know. The sound of air is wavering. Its form is zigzag and its color blue. Its voice is heard in storms when the wind blows, and in the whispering of a morning breeze. Its effect is breaking, sweeping, and piercing. The sound of air finds expression in all wind instruments made of wood, brass, and bamboo. It has a tendency to kindle the fire in the heart. As Rumi writes in his Mathnavi about the flute, Krishna is always portrayed in Indian art with a flute. Well, drive carefully. Blessings. The air sound overpowers all other sounds and is the living, and for it is living, and in its very aspect, its influence produces ecstasy. So one more, and that is ether, or sometimes the Tibetans refer to this element as space. The sound of ether is self-contained, and it holds all forms and colors. It is the base of all sounds, and it is the undertone, which is ever continuous. Its instrument is the human body. B. because it can be audible through it. Although it is all-pervading, yet it is unheard. It manifests to us as we purify our body from material properties. It manifests to us as we purify our body from material properties. The body can become its proper instrument when the space within is opened, when all the tubes and veins in it are free. Now, can anyone understand why we're focusing on the breath practice? Do you understand what this teaching is telling us? I mean, he's not saying, okay, and this happens when you do a breath practice, but he's indicating that to us by saying, although it is all-pervading, yet it is unheard, it manifests to us as we purify our body from material properties. The body can become its proper instrument when the space within is opened and all the tubes and veins in it are free. There's no other way to do it except through the breath. Then the sound which exists internally in space becomes manifest inwardly also. Now this is what's called the Nada Brahma, or the eternal sound. And some people that are practitioners know that sound. You hear it all the time. It's like every sound that was ever made is happening still simultaneously with its vibration. And if one is tuned, one can hear that eternal sound. If it starts to happen, please don't run to the doctor for them to poke in your ear. Some people say I've got ringing in my ears. It's, if you tune to it in a different way, it actually may be an indication of something else. Alima was going to say something.
Often, instead of hearing it in the physical ears, there's a center above and just behind the ears. It's the clear audience centers. And that's where that sound is easy to perceive. Also, I got to work with Moshe Chomsher long ago, and he's the person that introduced me to the concept of ether. Mm-hmm. And he would talk about ether is what's between everything else. Ether surrounds every cell. Ether's in every empty space that's not ever empty.
Right.
That helped me to relate to it.
And I think it's also, it's a dynamic, although it's kind of a dynamic principle, because it's the very thing that kind of holds things. You know, it contains things and it also holds things. So it's like that dynamic. We were watching a show on the relationship of the earth and the moon, and sort of that dynamic quality. In one sense, there's a gravitational pull, but there's also, with the spinning, a gravitational thrust. That's a dynamic space that's alive and full, as you would say. To me, that's the etheric element. It's there, and yet it's not there. You know,